What's going on, my friends? You're listening to episode 308 of the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's up? I hope you guys are doing amazing today. And I can't tell you how excited and pumped I am about today's masterclass because it's coming with a unique twist and it's coming from a completely different perspective. Really good friend of mine, Angie Sanchez here out of Miami, who is a certified integrative nutrition health coach. And she's a health and lifestyle coach. She works one-on-one with entrepreneurs. And this particular episode, so Angie is not in the real estate space, although she does have a lot of clients that are real estate investors, realtors, and she's got a really good diverse group of people that she works with. And one of the things that we're going to be really connecting on, and I'm going to tell you why you need to tune in and not tune out just because we're not talking, you know, tactics and strategies of real estate investing, but we're talking about emotional intelligence. We're talking about mastering your emotions. We're talking about, you know, just real life challenges that people are faced with. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs I connect with on a weekly basis that are struggling financially, are struggling in their relationships, health and fitness. We discuss and really do a deep dive into work-life balance and just the common mistakes that entrepreneurs make. And so, you know, we also talk about the importance of just putting yourself in other people's shoes, building empathy. And so much of this can translate to what you guys are doing in your real estate businesses when it comes to communicating and speaking with sellers, buyers, agents, just anybody that you come in contact with. So really, this is a masterclass on communication, on connecting with people. Like I said, mastering your emotions and why that's so critical to your success as an entrepreneur and to your success as a person. You know, especially if you're listening to this, chances are you want to grow, you want more out of life. Well, that's exactly what Angie is passionate about. You know, she wants to empower and inspire people, you know, by leveraging optimal health and helping people really kind of find their purpose, their truth, their strength, etc. So this is a very different type of expert interview on the masterclass here, and I know you guys are going to get a lot out of it. I encourage you to stick through. And Angie just tells it how it is. She's very raw and real, and just to the point. And runs a very successful business here out of Miami. So anyways, guys, without further ado, I'm excited to introduce you to you, my friend Angie Sanchez, and jump into episode 308. What's going on, my friends? This is Alex Pardo, host of the Flip Empire Show. And I have a very, very special guest on today, a good friend of mine, Angie Sanchez, who I have known for probably about two and a half years now. We were introduced by a really close friend of mine, Armando Cruz, who's also a friend of Angie's. And guys, my motivation, you know, I believe in being fully transparent and authentic. My motivation for getting Angie on, aside from the fact that she's a friend and really cool, down-to-earth person, she's a successful entrepreneur and she comes from a different space. And she personally works one-on-one with entrepreneurs, helps them with relationship challenges, health and fitness challenges, emotional challenges. And at the end of the day, we're not investors and entrepreneurs. That's not what makes us. What makes us is the life that we live, our beliefs, our thought patterns. And I wanted to have Angie on because I have so many conversations with investors and entrepreneurs that are struggling and they're not happy, they're not fulfilled, and they're constantly striving for money and for freedom, but yet their house is crumbling. Their health is not where it needs to be. And I think it's a problem. I think, you know, this podcast was addressed to help you create a better life and leverage this business to create the kind of lifestyle you want. But if your health is not where it needs to be, if your relationships are not where they need to be, it means nothing. So with that, Angie, I want to kind of cue you in here. Tell people a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you're about, and then we can get into the heart of the content here.
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. My name is Angie Sanchez. Thank you so much, Alex, for creating the time and the space to do this, because I think everyone's going to really benefit from the other side of the coin.
So yes, absolutely.
So by credential, I am known as an integrative nutrition health coach. In a nutshell, what that means is place the emphasis on the term integrative, which means that I look at your health as more than just the food on your plate. I help bring balance and harmony back to something that I call primary food, which are your relationships, your career, your spirituality, and your physical activity. And the way that I do that is by addressing each one through emotional intelligence and emotional agility. So helping build that up in order for you to better understand the discrepancies and the imbalances and the challenges you're experiencing in each of those foods and how to tackle them through building that emotional agility and essentially that EQ.
Okay, got it. I'm very curious, how did you get into this space and how did you ultimately determine, you know, because I know you're big on finding your purpose and living your passion, living your truth. How did you end up, you know, getting into this business and working with entrepreneurs and just regular people as well?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you're bringing that up because I've seen in the last probably year and a half, my clientele shift into two categories, and it's entrepreneurs and people who are experiencing issues in their marriages or in their relationships and so forth. So,
right.
The way that I got into it, there's a whole story on this, but to kind of give you the bullet points, my own journey with clinical depression and binge eating disorder when I was 21 through 23. So I'm 31 now, so that was 10 years ago. But that time in my life definitely played a role into even me becoming so hungry to figure out why that happened to me and why it happens to a lot of people. I myself, when I went to college, I went to the University of Miami. My degree that I just chose out of pure fascination was psychology. And it's always intrigued me because the human mind has always fascinated me and the way that it works. So I think the combination of that general intrigue that I had and then what happened to me was what kind of became the catalyst for kind of exploring and seeing what was there for me. And then, you know, my own experience with the corporate world and how that was such a burnout and it was,
tell me
it
about
was awful. Yeah. Yes. I did that for about 3.5 years and I saw firsthand, not just what I went through, but what I would see other people go through. And they would always be coming to me for not just advice, but like, we see how you're, you know, doing really well with it. It appeared that I was to them. And then it just, I would just would find myself coming back home to doing the things that I loved, which was fitness and nutrition and health, in particular mental health.
Yeah.
And just so my fascination with human behavior and the human mind, and just wanting to understand why it works the way it does and why our emotions work the way they do really just became the drive to do something about it and essentially turn my passion into profit and build a business doing it.
You know, I'm fascinated by many aspects of your story, Angie. Number one, the fact that I love the saying, you know, a setback is a setup for a comeback. And it sounds like you were going through something really deep, you know, 10 years ago. And it sounds like you used that as a catalyst and the driving force to essentially propel you to where you are today and build a successful business and then impact others. That's the second part of your story that really fascinates me. And it's something that I have become just more in tune with is I feel so much more fulfilled as a person when I know I'm impacting and helping others. And that sounds so cliche. I even hate tossing it out there because it sounds like, you know, I'm doing it for an ulterior motive. And that's just, I just genuinely feel fulfilled. And I feel like we relate on that level.
I 100% agree with you. My objective in this interview with you, in a consultation, in a session, when I'm out hanging out socially, is to leave others feeling better than how they got there. At least when they come into sort of interaction with me.
Yeah.
And it's not, it doesn't really come from a selfish place. It just comes from a place of me being a person of integrity and being what I stand for. And that is just being love. And me by being that, I now, it's almost like I give permission for others to do the same. Where now they can, wow, like you know, nice, sweet people actually exist and people who want to help you. And they have no ulterior motive. They're just being who they are. And so that authenticity and integrity is something huge that I definitely do carry over from my personal life into my business. And I think because a lot of people see that after working with me is why they stick around.
Yeah. And I can see that from the outside. And I know a few people personally that have worked with you and they've had that same experience. And I know that you'll agree with me here. I think when you're on a constant mission for personal development, when you strive to be the best version of yourself that you can be, you start to attract similar people into your ecosystem, right? And it's the people that you surround yourself with, regardless of the business and the space you're in, it's critical to just living a fulfilled life and the success that you experience or lack thereof, right?
Yeah, and I would even say it's actually a really smart move to be yourself at all times, because what happens when you are and you're authentic and you're exactly who you are, the people and opportunities and situations that are not meant for you and that are not for you, they just kind of fall off.
Right.
And the ones who are and the situations that are and the opportunities that are for you now get drawn in as a result of being exactly who you are. So that I think that's even a smart business move.
100%. Totally agree with you. I want to kind of pivot in, and I know you talk a lot about emotional intelligence, EQ. Define that for us, because I bet you if I was to kind of survey 10 people randomly on the street, I might get 8 to 9 different answers on emotional intelligence. So,
I'm sure there's, you know, like a formal definition to it. So I've just kind of taken my work around that and then spun it in my own way, so to speak. So it's basically when you become aware of your own feelings and the feelings and emotions of those around you. And now you use them to guide your actions, your behaviors, and the way that you proceed.
Okay.
So becoming aware of my feelings and emotions, and in this case, yours, right? Because you're the person I'm interacting with. And now I use that awareness to guide me in how I'm going to move forward.
Okay. How has that specifically leveraging, or I don't even know if leveraging is the best word, but being aware of emotional intelligence, how has that impacted, I guess, you in your personal life? And then how has it impacted your business? Because you're constantly interacting with people. Anybody listening to this show is interacting with people on a daily basis. At least most of us, I would imagine. So can you just kind of share some examples or experiences of how you've been able to take this knowledge that you have about emotional intelligence and like what it's done for you and your business?
Okay. I can sum it up with one word, and it's empathy.
Wow. I wasn't expecting you to be able to like nail it with one word.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not wearing it right now, but I typically wear those My Intent bracelets that have one word.
Yep. I've seen them.
And mine says empathy, because not only is it what I stand for, but I believe it's the biggest key to success, and it's been the biggest key to my success. So if you are a person who's able to practice empathy at a high level, you have high emotional intelligence. You are a person who you can say you have a high EQ, because this is what happens when you practice empathy. Empathy is, in the simplest way, defined as you being able to put yourself in another person's shoes effectively, right?
Okay.
So I am able to understand what you're feeling right now and what you're going through and what your concerns are, right? And if I don't, I make it my business to seek to understand what that is.
Wow.
When I do that and I put my emphasis and energy and focus on that, I now know exactly what's happening on your end. And now I can effectively create a solution or a strategy to solve the problem that you're experiencing.
Absolutely love that. So it's about putting yourself in the other person's shoes and trying to feel what they're feeling, right? Regardless of what they're going through.
Or understand it. Just understand. You don't have to share in the feeling, but if you can understand where it's coming from or what may be influencing it, now it's going to teach you how to move forward. Essentially, Gary Vee is a big proponent of empathy. This is one of like the couple of things. I don't agree with everything he says, but
neither do I. He's awesome, but neither do I. Yeah.
Yeah, I take the stuff, you know, that I like, and I'm like, that's awesome. And I'm with it. And his big thing is empathy.
And self-awareness, right?
Yeah. it's one of the best things you can do to leverage a business, because think about it this way. If you take the time, effort, and energy to focus on the pain points, the concerns, the problems that your target market is having, and you do whatever you have to do to understand it, now you know exactly what product or service you can create or what offering you can provide that's going to help solve that.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the biggest mistakes that we're not talking real estate here. We're just talking, you know, business and entrepreneurship. Is sometimes people create a product or service they think the market's going to like, or what they think is cool, what they feel is going to resonate, but they haven't taken the time to figure out what are the challenges? What are the pain points that your target audience, your seller avatar, your customer avatar has? So 1,000%. This might be an odd question for you, but how do you practice empathy? Like, is this something that comes natural, that is instilled in all of us? So I'm putting myself now in the shoes of somebody working out or driving, listening to this podcast. And like what you just shared with me connected, right? It makes sense what you're saying. And I think naturally I can feel empathetic towards people. I don't know that I'm always that way. And maybe that's something I need to strive towards. But how do you practice it? Is it just a matter of being self-aware? What are your thoughts on that?
The best way to practice empathy, and there's many ways, but I would find one of the most effective ones is asking questions. Most people have, unfortunately, and from my experience, it doesn't mean that it's the truth, it's just my experience. Most people have know-it-all syndrome. So, you know, and granted, I can understand where sometimes it comes from and things like that. However, always ask questions, even if you feel that you know the answer, because you may be surprised to hear what ends up being the response. So seek to understand, even when you don't understand, is still practicing empathy. So I want to know what's there, right? So I'm going to ask you, what do you need? That's something that my boyfriend and I practice in our relationship, because empathy is not just in business, it's like in life, right? So a lot of times when someone is having some sort of conflict, whether it's inner conflicts with themselves or conflicts with another person, somewhere, somehow, someone's needs aren't being met.
Yeah.
So a great, powerful question is, what do you need? It's as simple as, what do you need? Yeah. You know what? I just need you to listen right now, because I don't feel like I'm being heard. I don't feel like I'm being understood. And you'll find that what most people are looking for is to feel understood by another person.
Yeah.
So empathy is seeking to understand as well. So I find that when you ask questions and you get curious before assuming, what's one of the four agreements, don't assume.
Or you know what happens when you assume, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Ask that of me.
That's right. That's right.
So asking questions to me has, I've seen how it shows, like it makes you a more bigger, stronger empathizer, so to speak. So always ask questions, because when you ask a question, you get an answer.
Correct.
When you ask a question, you get feedback, you get data. And now you're okay, here I am thinking that maybe it was this, but now I know it's this because I asked a question.
Sure.
And now I can serve you or serve the situation.
Correct. And I think what I'd piggyback on what you're sharing, Angie, is ask the question, but I think you genuinely have to care, you know, regardless of what that answer may be. Because sometimes, you know, and this is kind of communications 101, is sometimes we interact with people and we ask a question, but we're so concerned about what we're going to respond or what we're going to say next that we're not even actively listening to the person. So, I love what you're saying. And I think to take it a step further, I think you just genuinely have to care. If you're going to ask a question, don't just kind of go through the motions, but it makes sense as to some way. Yeah. It's not about you, right? Exactly. Focusing on the other person.
And something else I have found too, because I've been, lately, a lot of my entrepreneur clients have wanted to, and I saw that you were doing this too.
What's that?
To fine tune their public speaking skills.
Yes.
I've been helping them with that. It used to be my biggest fear. I kid you not, my biggest one. And I overcame it. And so I teach them now.
Yeah.
Just like little things, nothing super crazy. Right. I'm not like a master's queen or anything like that either. But I find that one of the reasons that people fear public speaking so much is because once they get up there, they make the entire experience about them.
Yeah.
How do I sound? How do I look? Are my pits sweating? Are these
What are people going to think about me?
Exactly. When in reality, you're not up there for you. You're up there for the message. You're up there for them. So when you put the focus on the message and I'm making sure they're getting what they came there for, it's almost like a little bit of that pressure just kind of falls off because it's not about you.
Angie, and this will be interesting for the audience. So just to kind of get raw and real, I don't know if you remember this, the very first time you and I spoke, right? You were essentially interviewing me, right? Because you were involved with Man Talks, and you were kind of spearheading a local event here, and you were looking for three speakers. And the topic, I believe, if I remember correctly, was resiliency, right? And I remember that on that call, I specifically told you, I want to do it. I'm in, but this is a fear of mine, right? not just public speaking, but the fact that I'm going to talk about such a painful moment in my life, you know, where I was in, you know, six figures in debt to the IRS and I had to go through all that. And you shared that very message with me. And this was about 2 years ago. And it meant a lot at that point because you and I didn't even know each other. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Glad you remember it. And I hope it's helped you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I'm more comfortable with now, but I still continue to push myself to just, I want it to be so natural that I don't even think about it, you know?
Like a dialogue, right?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And guys, just when you're listening, so much of this relates to any aspect of your life. So when you're meeting with sellers, when you're negotiating with buyers, practice empathy, you know, put yourself in their shoes, ask questions like Angie's talking about. And how did you put it? Seek to understand. I don't want to butcher it, but you said something that struck a chord with me, but I'm just not capturing the words. You said something like seek to understand and you'll be understood or something along those lines.
What people seek the most is to be understood. So even there if you don't understand, make it your business to seek to understand.
There you go. There you go. You said it so much more eloquently than I did. Awesome.
I don't try.
So I want to ask you about, I don't want to use the word case study because that sounds so damn scientific, right? But like the entrepreneurs that you work with, and obviously we're not going to get into like specifics, but just what are you seeing that is kind of plaguing entrepreneurs specifically? Holding them back from living the life they want to live, from growing their businesses, from being the best version of themselves. Can you kind of share some of the things that you're seeing without obviously naming names or anything like that?
Right. So just to give you a little bit of an overview of the type of entrepreneurs that I work with right now, I work with a lot of, you know, people in the real estate industry, realtors, investors, developers.
Yeah.
And then just other coaches as well. Whether they're trainers or, you know, life coaches or whatever coach. And then I'm seeing a lot of people as well in the healthcare field leave hospitals and so forth and start their own like private practices, like speech language pathologists and things like that. So I'm getting a little bit of everything. And I have seen, I would say that there's probably two commonalities between all of those people and all of those industries and groups and the people I'm seeing. And the first one would be is that they tend to make themselves for everyone.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate a little bit?
Yes. They tend to make themselves for everyone. For example, they think that what they're doing and what they're offering and the way that they're doing it is something that's going to be for everyone. So, for example, that's like me going out there and saying, come work with me because I will improve your life.
It's very general, very vague.
Yeah. So it's like they make it for like the general public, right? They're not very like specific. So here's where I would come in and I'm like, okay, so I only want to work with a particular type of person because I'm very clear on my message and the pain points I want to help people tackle. So come work with me. I would like to help you or I can help you improve your life by building your emotional intelligence, your emotional agility, teaching you to be a better and more effective leader and communicator in your personal life and in your business. And have a deeper, more profound relationship with yourself so your self-awareness can boom.
Yeah. So that was very specific. Yeah.
Their message, what they're doing, the role they play, what they offer, they make it very generic and very like for everyone, right? So it's about, again, empathy, right? Getting very specific and figuring out what the qualities your avatar embodies.
Okay.
What qualities do you embody? What problems, pain points, and concerns are they typically experiencing over and over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they at in their life? What is the exact language, words, thoughts, phrases that they typically use? For example, I hate starting on Monday again, like a diet. Like, oh, I have to start on Monday, or I'll start again on Monday. You know, right? Yeah. That would be something that maybe like a trainer or something would want to use as a phrase that their target market uses. And then finally, what exact solution do you offer? What are the exact solutions that you do offer? So when you can like kind of hone in and be very specific in each of those categories, essentially you build an avatar, right?
Correct. Correct.
And now when you create your content or you write your newsletters or send your stuff through your email list or do your podcast, your videos, now you can speak directly into those pain points and those concerns and say that these are the exact solutions I offer. Yeah. By you doing that, you're not for everyone.
Correct.
You're for a very specific niche and you can be that much more effective. And that way you stop experiencing all these people coming to you that are not a good fit.
Yeah.
Because typically when that happens, you get a lot of no's and you get a lot of, I don't want to work with that person.
Yeah.
Because you're making yourself for everyone.
And that's a good thing. You need to hone in and craft your message. The message, it's Dan Kennedy, right? The marketing guru, your message has to match the market at the right time. You know, you can't be so general because you're just not going to make an impact and speak to the people that I think it's the analogy I think of Angie is using a magnifying glass on a leaf or something. You leave it there long enough, it's going to burn a hole through it. But if you're constantly like moving and you have a message that just, you're trying to like, you know, appease this person and this person, it's just not going to work. And I think people, this is going to really resonate with them because in our space, we buy a lot of distressed properties from homeowners that are going through financial distress, circumstantial distress, like divorce or a death in the family. And I see so many marketing pieces that's just, we buy houses, right? But it doesn't speak to a specific pain point, you know?
And so, I also find that to piggyback on that, now taking it a step further is, okay, so now that's on the side of the target audience, right? So like your people. What about you now? So what is it about you that makes you so different? What is it about you that makes you stand out from the next, you know, person who's doing exactly what you're doing? What makes me so different from the next health coach or lifestyle coach? It's, you know what I mean? So essentially there's something that I call, and you guys may find this very useful, finding your red bottom.
Red bottom. I've never heard that.
Yeah. So watch. So think of, which I kind of just gave you the answer, but whatever. Think right now, if I were to ask you, what are three very popular female shoe brands that you can find or that you can identify? And typically when people name the three, one of those three ends up being Christian Louboutin.
Yep.
Louboutin. Correct?
Right. Right.
So why is it that is in everybody's head? Right?
Yeah. And by the way, I'm a man and I don't know anything about women's shoes, but I know the red bottom heels.
Do you see how you know that? Yeah. So what is it about them? They're red bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. That is their staple. That's their signature. That's what they'll always be known for. Yeah. They're a high price point too, but that's irrelevant at the end of the day. Women want the shoes with the red bottom.
Right.
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 So essentially, what's your red bottom? So a lot of the work I do with entrepreneurs is we figure out what's your red bottom. And this isn't done in one session or two sessions. Sometimes it takes a little while. So I think that's also crucial to figure out, to devote some time to figuring that out. What is your red bottom? What is it about you that makes you you? And it's different from the next person who's doing the same exact thing that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Another way to say it is your unique selling proposition. I like the way you're saying it better. That's very unique. It's just
simple, right? More like,
it's a perfect example because like I said, I don't know anything about women's shoes, but I know the red bottom heel, you know, which is crazy. It's so true. Talk to me a little bit, Angie, about what are you seeing when you work with anyone? It doesn't have to be entrepreneurs, but there's so much talk out there about work-life balance, right? Yeah. And there's different schools of thought. You know, we've mentioned Gary Vee, and obviously he's, let's just assume he's on this side of the spectrum, right? But that's what he loves. That's what he, you know, and so it, you know, him working 18-hour days, that's his red bottom, working eight, whatever the case might be. Do you think that is a unicorn that entrepreneurs are chasing that doesn't exist? Or do you feel that work-life balance, you just need to get clear and define what that means for you and then live that? Where do you fall as far as work-life balance? And then what have you seen as far as some of the clients you're working with, how it's been affecting or not affecting them?
Okay. So I'll start off with something I have seen, and then I'll talk a little bit about how it is for me. So I'm going to use an example of someone that I worked with about 2 years ago. So he is a CPA, and when he put on his consultation form, I always ask approximately how many hours of work per week do you average?
Right.
Mm-hmm. He put 80.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But again, I am genuinely not here to judge. Mm-hmm. I am here to get curious. Okay. So I ask questions. So, you know, tell me a little bit more about that. Has it always been 80? Is it just like that now? Is this something that you strive for? Do you feel like you want to change that? You know, so his language around that was, oh my God, no, I love my job. I love what I do. I finally have my own firm and I'm doing everything I wanted to be doing and what I worked for. And I got to a place where I want to get to. I mean, obviously it's a lot of hours, you know, but my job actually gives me so much energy and so forth. So that was his whole spiel about basically validating why he works 80 hours per week.
Okay.
And he's married and he has kids and all that. So I then asked him, so remind me again why you're coming to me, just really quick. And he's like, well, I mean, you know, I'm overweight, like I need to exercise and my marriage right now is not too hot and so forth, right? I said, okay. So out of your four primary foods, I'm going to remind you and the viewer, your audience, what they are again, mm-hmm. your relationship, yeah. your career, your spirituality, and your physical activity. I asked him, out of your four, which one do you feel is the most imbalanced? He's like, I guess my physical activity, because like it's non-existent and I have no mm-hmm. time for it. And I said, wrong. It's your career. And he's like, no, but I already told, and I'm like, the reason it's your career is because you are so gung-ho on your career and the way that you're going about it is causing you to neglect the other three. And that is why they're suffering. So there's something about the way that you're working right now and handling career that it's bringing a huge imbalance to the other three. So if we're going to work together, we have to start by doing something about your career. And then he ended up signing up because he realized how okay. it really was affecting him.
And I bet you when you kind of brought that to his awareness, it was a complete mind shift for him,
oh my
right?
God. He felt threatened because he's like, no, I don't want to change anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, we're not going to change anything too drastic. We're just going to kind right. of see how you're doing things and make a few tweaks.
So is that a practical, like what are some practical steps or any advice you have for somebody that wants to take audit of those four key areas in their life? Is there a simple exercise or how do you suggest people listening go about and saying, okay, well, if I'm looking at these four areas in my life and I'm so slanted towards work, I'm putting so much time and energy into building the business that maybe my relationship with my spouse is not what I want it to be. Or maybe I only see my kids 1 hour a day or whatever it might, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe they spend, you know, they have so much free time, but they can't get traction in their business and they're kind of, yeah. it could be the opposite. Are there any practical steps or advice that you have that people can start to kind of wrap their arms around this?
So getting very clear on what your objective and your intention and your direction that you want to head into is crucial. Because when we have clarity, that's
yeah.
when we have, right? So when I spoke to him and got deeper with him, you know, about what was going on, I realized that he didn't want to be working like that. He thought that that's what it took, what it had to take in order for him to achieve the goals and create the vision that he had for himself.
Yeah.
Well, it's more of introducing him to another way of doing things. So I introduce him to my philosophy, not because I think it's the right one or the best one, but just to kind of see how he, you know, would react to it. And he was like, oh my God, I love this. And it's a very simple philosophy. Are you ready? It's not going to blow you out of water.
Okay.
It's learning how to work smarter, not harder.
You're speaking my language.
Yeah. So essentially, that's my philosophy. So I'll tell you right now, I work probably on no one week looks the same. So I'm going to say anywhere from 15 to 25 hours per week, something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he was working 80, you know, making his close to seven figures. And then we realized that a lot of his processes could be almost scaled and we can do them in other ways where he was now working less, still making the same amount of money and being able to find time to do the things that he wanted to do. So look, I'm straight up about this and I actually love to talk about this so I can kind of break this like little stigma. And if this goes against your philosophy, I'm sorry. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just what's right for me. I don't do early morning. That's not my jam. It's never going to be my jam. And it never was my jam.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell into this almost trap when I started my business 4 years ago that like you had to wake up at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. and do meditation and journal and all this bullshit, which is fine if you do it. I'm not judging. And my boyfriend does it literally. Like we're opposites. Yeah. And he wakes up 5 a.m. every day and does the stuff.
By the way, I'm on the side of your boyfriend, by the way, but go ahead. Keep going.
You and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
So it's fine. It's fine. So, and he would be like, you know, you should try to wake up early so you can get more done and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm good. I have my system that worked. And so, you know, we've been together now for a year and a half. He's seen it for himself, how I work. And he's like, I get it now. And I also get why you don't have to change that. Yeah. And it's like my point in saying this is that what I do and what you do, Alex, and what my boyfriend does, it's not wrong or right. It's just what ends up being right for you.
Bingo.
Don't compare yourself to another person that's doing what they're doing and think you have to be like them just because they have the things that you have or have attained the goals that you would like to attain.
Spot on.
So, you have to experiment and see what works for you. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I wake up at 11 in the morning or anything like that, you know, but I do wake up later and I wake up at different times every day. It depends on my first client. And, you know, I have my own routine. So what I focused on was making sure instead of having this like miracle morning, so to speak, that people call it, I think there's even like a book called Miracle Morning.
Yeah.
I focus on making sure that my morning is powerful. However that looks, I'm the one that gets to define what that looks like.
Yeah.
Not you, not anybody else. And as long as that is there, that's what works for me. And so that just complements my whole work smarter, not harder, you know, philosophy. Yeah. At the end of the day, there are people who are morning people and there are people who are more nocturnal also, who just thrive at night. And there's no right or wrong way. I am definitely more nocturnal. It's not that I want to be working at 10 o'clock at night. I just find that, believe it or not, after 6 o'clock, I'm a lot more creative. And that's when I like to do my lives. And that's when I like to, you know, I do all my documentation for my clients. Sure. And I just, you know, that's just what works for me. So there's no right or wrong.
I love what you're sharing. I totally agree with you, by the way. I've actually recorded probably a handful of podcast episodes on my morning routine and other people's routines. Mm-hmm. And here we are, we're presented with a different side of this. I don't think there's a one size fits all. I think I encourage people, Angie, and let me know if you agree or disagree. Mm-hmm. I encourage people to experiment and have fun with life. Like figure out if you want to wake up at 4 a.m, test it out, like play with that. If you want to wake up at 8, play with it. Like, whatever it looks like, whatever routine, I think what your message is, it's about the quality of your morning or your night or whatever, not so much what time you wake up, because what if I wake up at 4, but I don't get crap done for the next 3 hours and I'm just like, versus somebody that wakes up at 7 or 8, but they have a very intentional morning and they have something that works for them.
Yeah. You know, for me, I just found that I kept trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why am I forcing myself to do something that I already know, because I've gotten the feedback, that I don't like to do. So why am I going to keep doing it? And now it affects the way I show up. So I want to make sure that I show up in the way that works. Like, I fill my cup in a way where I can show up best because I filled my cup in that way. Not because I forced myself to wake up at 6 in the morning.
Sure.
Because everybody's doing it.
I'm curious, what does your morning routine look like? And I like to draw from people's experiences and.
Yeah. So, I don't have very many constants. The one thing for sure that I do immediately when I wake up is to myself, I'm like, thank you. I just always say thank you.
Express gratitude.
I don't write it. I don't, you know, sing it. I just say it to myself and I kind of like, I'm like, thank you, thank you. Then I get up and I have a cat who's my child. She's my daughter.
I've seen your cat all over Instagram and all over your lives.
So luckily my boyfriend, when he's here, cause he doesn't live in Miami full time yet. He'll feed her cause he gets up early. But when he's not, it's typically me. That's why I'm saying it doesn't always look the same, but then immediately I go shower. I find that, and this is a lot of people kind of make fun of me for this. One of the things that really brings me back to life is water. And not just drinking it, but actually stepping into the shower, whether it's hot or cold, depends on my mood. But I take about 2 to 3 showers a day.
Really?
Yeah, I do. And I'm going to tell you why. I consider myself an HSP, highly sensitive person.
Okay.
And so I'm seeing people all the time and I absorb a lot. So I have found that one of the most simplest things, and I'm not in there forever. I'll go and I start off my morning by taking a shower. And in the shower, man, that's my place of like, I do my breathing. Sometimes I switch with hot and cold. Sometimes I just do cold. Sometimes I do hot. That really gets that physiology of my body. Like that.
Absolutely.
Makes that, like, that change going. And then sometimes if I have gaps in between sessions during the day and I had like a bunch that were kind of heavy, I go in the shower. Rinse, good to go for my second half of the day. And then at night, before I go to bed, after I work out and stuff, I shower again.
So very interesting. I was not expecting you to share that, by the way.
So that's a constant in my morning routine. No matter if I'm seeing clients that day or not, if I'm out of town or not, the first thing I do is I go take a shower. And for me, that shower in the morning is very almost spiritual. It's like a ritual for me. What I do in there is a sacred. And then I typically practice intermittent fasting, so I don't eat first thing in the morning.
Okay. But I have a selfish question I want to toss your way, because I am a morning person. Although let me tell you, not to get into a rabbit hole, part of me believes that whether people say I'm a morning person or I'm a night person, I'm not a morning person. I tend to believe, my belief is just my, you know, what I think, not what, you know, is that that's a story people tell themselves. My opinion, but
it is,
you
a
know,
story.
Yeah. Either way. Do you recommend intermittent fasting after an intense 5 a.m. workout? So if I work out at 5 a.m., I've been practicing on and off intermittent fasting. However, 3 to 4 days a week, I'm getting in a 5 a.m. workout. So when I finish that workout at 6 a.m., to not eat until noon is challenging. And I don't feel, you kind of have to listen to your body and know your body. So I don't have the answer to this, but I'm curious, since you practice intermittent fasting, and there's a lot of health benefits, by the way, guys, of intermittent fasting. There's a lot of books out there about it. Where do you land on that? Like, if you were to work out early in the morning?
Okay. So first of all, I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I only know what I've done. And I'm also, very good friends. I have a colleague who's very, and he's an expert in the field. So I definitely consult with him. long time. What I do know for sure that I am 100% comfortable sharing with you and everyone is that you need to start small when you practice intermittent fasting. And there's different methods of intermittent fasting. So, and they all serve a purpose. So it depends which one you're aiming to do. I don't recommend the one you're doing if you're trying to do like a 24-hour fast. You're going to pass out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? But then there's a very popular method called the 16-8 method, which is I think the one you're referring to where you eat at 12 and you have a window till about 8 and then you stop and then you don't eat again until 12.
That's right.
So 16-8 method is not, it doesn't matter the time. Like as far as it doesn't have to be from this time to this time. What matters is that make sure you get those hours. So what I would do in your case or what I would recommend is that if you know that you want to do a fasted workout or fasted cardio, which is great mm-hmm. for fat burn, and you want to do it first thing in the morning, I would make my eating time closer to the end of the workout.
Okay.
Because it's really important that you feel like right after a workout,
yeah,
for sure.
Right.
So instead of making it start time at 12, maybe try like 10 or 11, which means that you'll have to stop eating by 6 or 7.
Okay. So just adjust
it. Your 8-hour window could vary. It doesn't have to be 12 to 8. It could be 10 to 6, 11 to 7, 9 to 5, whatever. So that's what I would recommend so that you move it closer to when you're done with your workout. Okay. Also, I find that for people who are ready to practice the 24-hour one, you always want to start kind of like when some of your day has passed. So for example, when I do my 24-hour ones, I do it once a week. I'll end my eating at 4, 5, or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't eat again until that time the next day. I know people that love to work out in the morning and have a big, big breakfast after.
Yeah.
And then they'll start their 24-hour at that time. So let's say they'll start at like 7 or 8 in the morning. And that's the last time that they have that meal. And then they'll eat again at 7 or 8 the next day.
Got it.
So, I mean, it really just depends on what you're looking for. And it depends on what works with your schedule. I find that if you like to do those early AM workouts, being able to feel closer to the end of it is probably going to be better for you. Not just because you're starting, but because for your insulin, I feel it'll be really good. Also, very important, and I have to say this to you because a lot of people don't talk about it with intermittent fasting. It's very important that you know what to break your fast with.
So it's not just about putting any healthy food in your body. It's got to be a specific type of...
Mm-hmm. So okay. A lot of people will do, you know, just like a regular meal. They'll have oatmeal or they'll do like avocado toast or things like that or like a fruit smoothie. When your body has been fasting for so long, okay,
yeah,
you can introduce it to such like a big spike with sugar and something starchy and carby. Mm-hmm. So I always recommend, especially if you're doing a 24-hour fast, to break it with bone broth first. And it's just like in a mug, just like if you were to serve some water or coffee in a mug.
Right.
Drink that first, okay? Wait maybe like a few minutes, like for you, it would be breakfast, right? And then you can have maybe some eggs and avocado. So something that's like a good batch, like a protein. Something you don't want to break a fast with, like I said, is something starchy, something carby. Raw vegetables are very mm-hmm. hard on the digestive system when you're breaking a fast. So make sure if you do want to have some veggies that they're at least steamed.
Okay.
Yeah, very because you can create a lot of disaster and cause a lot of damage by what you're breaking your fast with.
I love it. I'm always, every time I interview someone, I learn several things every time, like without fail. It's amazing. Last couple of questions for you, Angie. You're young, you're 31. Rewind the clock 10 years when you were going through that difficult period in your life. Knowing what you know now, what's the one piece of advice you would have shared with yourself that people listening can potentially connect or relate to that can help them depending on where they're at in their life. So if you had to kind of boil it down to one thing, knowing what you know now, what comes to mind for you?
Invest your resources in building your emotional intelligence.
Got it.
When I say resources, it's time and money. Don't take what you know and what they teach you in school as like matter of fact, and this is how it is. If you find something is wrong with it or something is missing, don't just stop there, but do something about it. In my case, I hired a coach because I realized there was this whole part of the person, the whole human that wasn't being addressed in school. And I felt pretty much what I'm doing now is I created and I'm offering a resource that I wish existed 10 years ago, which is having access to building my EQ.
Okay.
So definitely investing your resources in addressing emotional intelligence, your EQ, not just your IQ, because it's really going to help you navigate through the challenges of life a lot easier.
Yeah. I think what I want to add to that, and that's really, really good advice, and I'm glad you went in that direction. Guys, if you're faced with whatever challenge you're faced with, and you know, we're human. Like life has its peaks and its valleys, and it's. I think sometimes it's the scars, and it's the challenges that shape you into the person you're becoming or the person you want to become. At least that's my belief. Do something about it. You know, so often I hear people complain, or they're just not happy with where their life looks like today, and then I'll ask, like, "What are you doing about that?" And they can't give me a clear, concise answer. Right? Because it's just too easy to stay in that place and complain about it. And so if that's you, just don't judge yourself over it, but do something about it. And hopefully, you know, some of the advice that Angie has shared is something that you can take with. I always talk about speed of implementation. Is that they hear something. Right information, resources, and
I mean, I see you, but I can't hear what you're saying. It's like scratching.
Oh, okay.
I literally cannot hear. I mean, you're that's what you sound like. Oh, no. No. I don't know what to do. Right? Can't hear you. I mean, I know that there's sound. It's just coming in and out as if you were on the phone.
Hold on one second. Really, really appreciate the time. Thank you. This has been a lot of fun for me. For taking the time. Where can people connect with you, reach out, find out more about what you have going on?
Thank you, Alex, because I feel that more podcasts have to be done like this. People need to talk about these things. So the fact that you were able to recognize this opportunity is like amazing. So thank you for being so awesome. As far as where people can reach me, they can, the most active social media platform for me is Instagram. So that's where I spend most of my time. So my handle for Instagram is @IamAngieSanchez. And my website in which you can go to and reach out to me for coaching or anything as well is www.angiesanchez.life. And that's LIFE.
Awesome. Angie, thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate you and everything that you're doing, you know, with your ventures and your business, and for coming on and kind of just educating us on topics and content that we might not necessarily have covered in the past. So really appreciate you, my friend. Thank you. And guys, hopefully, perfect. Now you can hear me. Okay. Fair enough. Well, either way, guys, Angie, again, thanks a lot. This has been a lot of fun. It's been effortless. And I know people are going to connect with you and your message and the episode. So guys, I'd love to start a dialogue on some of the social platforms. Hit me up @AlexPardo25. Connect with Angie on Instagram @IamAngieSanchez, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay. And then you can reach out to Angie, AngieSanchez.life. So appreciate you guys. Angie, I know you and I will be in contact ever. If there's ever anything you need, you know my number. And thank
likewise,
you.
Likewise, my-
Thank you.
I can't wait to put this out.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll talk soon, guys. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.